This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
The Clipper Guide to Cuba is a marvellous book. I'm lucky enough to possess the 1947 edition, price 1 peso, or $1, which shows who the book was aimed at. Americans were enamoured of the Caribbean's largest island, and the Cubans so impressed by the US currency that they kept the peso at parity with the dollar. The Clipper Guide covers all of Cuba, so naturally the provincial cities get their moment in the sun. From Matanzas, the Athens of Cuba, due to the number of prominent poets and writers who were born here, we are told, to Bayamo, where the revolutionary spark was kindled. What of Holguín, the city I'm championing, home to close on 1/3 of a million people, making it one of the biggest and most important places in Cuba? It gets exactly 5 words: active, commercial and industrial centre. Well, you might think, not worth going there then. I hope to persuade you otherwise. There are 2 main candidates in the race to be the gateway for British tourists to Cuba. In the West, it is definitely the capital, Havana, whose rustic metropolitanism you know well. Even if you have never been to the dilapidated colonial city, you know the streets are lined with 1955 Oldsmobiles and sensuous salsa dancers. But the equal and opposite gateway is around 500 miles from Havana. It's the most misunderstood and mispronounced city in Cuba. You might imagine that since the first Sunworld charter jet touched down here in 1994, the staff at Gatwick Airport might have become a bit more proficient at pronunciation. Depending on the mood and linguistic capabilities of the airport announcer, it might be Holguín or Holguín, or very occasionally the correct rendition, Holguín, named after a conquistador, García Holguín. The name matters little to the average holidaymaker because in the course of a fortnight they will probably glimpse Holguín only 3 times, all in passing. Once on the departure board, a second time in the dark as their transfer bus trundles through the empty streets en route from the city's Franck Pays International Airport towards the all-inclusive resorts on the north coast. And on the third occasion, in broad daylight, on the way back to the airport. On that final journey, perhaps 1 or 2 of the package holidaymakers might wonder at the city's road system, a proposed ring road that, on a clock face, was built from 4 o'clock around to 9 o'clock, but never completed, presumably because the Transport Ministry in Havana concluded that Holguín is never going to be on anybody's fast lane. The Carretera Central, the mother road for Cuba, has a built-in zigzag that is designed to take it to Holguín. But predictably, everyone who doesn't actually want to visit the place takes a shortcut, saving about 60 miles on an east-west trip through the island. Another stump of a highway, the A1 Autopista, dwindles into the scrubland long before it reaches Holguín. The city didn't even make it onto the Trans-Cuba Railway, the nearest station on this line being at Cacacum, 10 miles southwest, beyond the airport. All the better then for us Holguinistas who revel in this city's splendid isolationism. Whatever you need to know about Cuba is contained in and around the city. It is, after all, in the ancient region of Oriente, Cuba's easternmost quarter, and its richest, historically and scenically. Columbus first landed close to here in 1492, in a lovely bay near Jibara. Soldiers sent southwards to investigate the island found an encampment about 25 miles inland, which the natives called Cubanacan, and which was probably the location for the first foundations of Olguín itself. Indeed, Olguín is so old that it is soon to celebrate its 500th anniversary. I first arrived in 1989, the year when the storm clouds began to gather across the island of Cuba. Fidel Castro had begun that year basking in the glorious revolutionary sun, with New Year's Day marking 30 years since he toppled the tyrant Fulgencio Batista. Economically, the island was, well, not exactly prospering due to some inept collectivization by the late Che Guevara, but at least surviving the US economic blockade thanks to a handsomely one-sided commodity deal with the Soviet Union. Moscow sold the island oil at well below the market rate and bought Cuba's sugar at inflated prices. Accordingly, life on the streets of Olguín was bearable. Ancient Oldsmobiles and Chevrolets rumbled volcanically along Calle José Martí. The shops had at least a few items to put on display, and the Hotel Pernik, based on a design photocopied from a dozen hotels along the Bulgarian coast, served fresh, appetizing dishes prepared from the best local ingredients. Not a phrase common in Cuba. And when humdrum urban existence in a land where scarcity was the norm got too much, it was always possible to grab a bottle of Havana Club, or perhaps some beers, unofficially procured from Olguín's own brewery, and head for the beach. Even beasts of burden were looked after. At the Mayabi Motel on the edge of town, Pancho the donkey lived more or less exclusively on a diet of beer. 5 years later, when I arrived aboard that pioneering holiday flight from Gatwick, the picture was bleak, not least because Pancho had just died. Perhaps he was broken-hearted at the decline of the revolutionary fervour, or maybe his rations had run out or been diverted for human consumption. This was the beginning of the special period in peacetime, Castro's term for eye-watering austerity, putting the entire nation on a diet, and besides the unsatisfied appetites, the national mood was of apprehension. 1994 was also the year of the first of many broadcasts predicting the imminent downfall of the communist regime. It didn't happen, partly because the president's prediction that year that only tourism can save Cuba proved correct. Those buses full of happy holidaymakers edging through the suburbs are part of the solution, which explains why 21st century Olguín is a city of good cheer. It's an amiable shambles. Olguín wears the past half century on its streets. There goes another lumbering American car, almost certainly built in Detroit, and most definitely rolling off the production line before 1960. That was when the United States pulled back the drawbridge on Cuba and stopped supplying the island because of the nationalization of American business interests. The vehicle is held together with spot welding, string, and sheer willpower, rather like Cuba itself. The local bus service is the most astonishing sight. Hold in your mind the image of a sleek 1950s Greyhound bus. Imagine that the driver's cab is taken out, with another couple of rows of seats installed. Then the whole thing, whose theoretical capacity is now, well, about 60, is hoisted onto the business end of a Soviet-built truck that grumbles mightily as it hauls the human cargo through scruffy streets. The direction signs tell a story, too. The rest of the world may have moved on from the dialectic materialism espoused by Karl Marx in the 19th century and put into practice, sort of, by Lenin in the 20th. But in Olguín, signs still point to the Vladimir Ilyich Lenin Hospital. Only the most important buildings clamber above a single story. The colours of the structures are a designer's dream, all pastel pinks and creams splashed with lime and maroon. while the colours of the skin are equally varied. Nothing to do with social engineering, just take Spanish invaders and opportunists, African slaves, French exiles, and the odd Chinese émigré, and you have a typical selection of Holguineros. Like other unknown cities, Holguín is not overburdened with compelling tourist attractions. The best you can say about the Church of San Isidro is that it has survived in innocuous solitude for almost three centuries. Sheer endurance combined with some shrewd politicking by Fidel Castro saw it raised to the status of cathedral in 1979. Onwards to the past in the shape of the Museo de Historia Natural. The Natural History Museum is an endangered species of its own. These institutions at the cusp between zoology and ideology used to pop up everywhere in the Eastern Bloc, from East Berlin to Vladivostok, all telling the same story of the triumph of state socialism and collapse of capitalism, usually through the medium of stuffed voles, battle-weary flags and faded photographs of revolutionary martyrs. The pink, turquoise and white neoclassical mansion is a great survivor in one of the last bastions of communism, and it also has the world's finest collection of polymeter shells from the brightly coloured snails which are endemic along the coasts of eastern Cuba. Talking of the Atlantic shore, the province that Holguín commands enjoys the best stretch on the island. Beyond the all-inclusive resort of Guadalavaca, Cubans excluded unless they work there, the pretty port of Barnes stands forgotten and a touch forlorn, like a fading star. Further east, the nickel mining town of Moa marks the start of Cuba's best drive, a scramble along rough tracks and over makeshift bridges to the nation's last resort, Baracoa. Holguín province is also where both Batista and his nemesis Castro were raised. Back in Holguín, the best vista of the modest city is from the Loma de la Cruz, the Hill of the Cross, reached by a flight of 461 steps. Halfway up, you can choose from two competing cafes. Except, this being Cuba, they're not really competing. One takes only convertible pesos, the homegrown hard currency, and is therefore the preserve of the odd tourist and Cubans who have rich relatives in Miami. The other is for the locals, accepting moneda nacional. Some climbers are more equal than others. When you reach the top, you discover that while this is certainly a hill, it lacks a cross. Sadly, La Cruz was destroyed in a 1998 storm and has yet to be resurrected. Still, one can enjoy a 180-degree view from the top and conclude that the 1947 Clipper Guide to Cuba is out of date. Given the nation's economic torpor, Holguín can hardly be described as an active commercial and industrial centre. But another donkey, Pancho Dos, has acquired a taste for the local beer. Long may he, and this very human, well-intentioned, if unknown city, be preserved.